A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brialso Lake puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
All right, joining us now, beat reporter for the Oregon Ducks and the Pac-12 for the Oregonian, James Krepia, kind enough to join us. James, how are you?
Hey, James.
Doing well, guys. How are you guys doing?
We're doing all right. So Oregon comes in at the AP poll ranked number 11. Do you think that's a should they be higher? Should they be lower? Is that about where you would put them?
That's pretty much where I'd have them. Yeah, yeah. Full disclosure, I'm not one of the AP poll voters for footballs, and haven't been. So I can't say like, well, I had them here. No, I didn't have them anywhere. I'm not an official voter for the AP. But no, truly, I think there's a reason why the AP poll and the coaches poll, the top five of it, is basically the exact same. And for that matter, that probably through top 15 is really similar. And it's not just, we could say this almost every year, but no, like, I don't really see a whole lot of argument to be made that Oregon should be higher than 11? I mean, I suppose maybe you could make an argument about, like, one spot or something, but how? I mean, much higher than that? I mean, why? Why would you have Oregon higher than 10, at least? Wow. I mean, if you're going to go by a combination of last year's results and what they've got returning and all those things, plenty of reason for optimism. No, could be wrong. But what are you going to have in the top five? I mean, you know, it's a little bit of a reach. So, no, I think 11's about right. You know, like I say, you could quibble about, ahead or behind Baylor or something like that. But truly, I think the top teams in the AP polls pretty much spot on.
Well, that was not my point. Is should they be higher? I think there's a lot of people that thought that might be too high for Oregon. But
the thing is, okay, so the teams who are, let's go like the next five teams or so behind them in the poll, who should absolutely be ahead of them? Well, Oklahoma State certainly closed the season better last year, but they lost a ton of talent and their defensive coordinator. NC State, are they absolutely better than Oregon? USC, frankly, I think USC is too high where they are. Michigan State had a better year by the end of it, but also, again, lost a lot of talent, too. Miami, there are people out there who tell you that Miami might be overrated at 15 or 16. Pittsburgh obviously lost a first-round pick at quarterback and the Biletnikoff winner at receiver. So when you start going through some of the next teams in the poll, like who should they be? Basically, how many teams behind them, immediately behind them, should be jumping them? To put the Ducks lower than 11. And if you did, by a spot or two, I'm not going to quibble, but I think somewhere between 10 and 13 or 14 was probably going to be the general consensus, and I think by the vote distribution of the AP poll, it's more or less right. You know, the most people had them somewhere between 10 and 14.
In some of the circles that you sit in and the conversations that you've heard in regards to Oregon hiring Dan Lanning as their next head coach, what was it that gave him the edge? What was it in particular that set him apart, having never been a head coach before, as getting the Oregon head coaching job?
Well, going back to December when the job came open, obviously in the timing of the cycle of when things were occurring, if you're going to make a change under the circumstances, you know, when it's a change coming about because, you know, your coach is leaving for a different job as opposed to, you know, this didn't happen because of poor performance on the field. Well, in light of that, if you're not going to hire a sitting head coach, and at that time in December, there was not a lot of, you know, sitting head coaches to go out and get, quite frankly, then you're going to go after some of the top assistants. And Lanning was absolutely, I mean, without question, at or near the top of anyone's list when you want to go to top assistants in college football. a two-time Broyles finalist for the defensive side, and obviously was coaching with a generational kind of defense at Georgia the past couple of years. Some would argue statistically maybe the best defense in college football history this past year. And then obviously went on to, you know, then have success in the playoff and win a national championship. But at the time Oregon made the hire, what stood out is one of the top young assistants in college football. And how many other people really fit that bill? And when you do, you know, when you're a Broyles finalist, I realize for a lot of fans, sometimes, you know, people are familiar, sometimes people aren't as familiar. Generally, you're a Broyles finalist, and you're in for a job change real quick. And a two-time Broyles finalist is almost unheard of because of how much that happened. Well, this past year, Lanning and Jeff Grimes, the offensive coordinator at Baylor, were two guys who were two-time finalists. Ironically, neither one had won. But Grimes himself was a two-time finalist year after year, and he changed jobs. He went from BYU to Baylor. And it's frankly a monumental upset of biblical proportions almost that Jeff Grimes hasn't gotten a head coaching job yet himself. He's probably at the top of the list of assistants in college football right now to be in line for, you know, head coaching jobs. So what's the guy about Lanning? He checked a lot of boxes. He was cut from the same cloth in terms of having worked for Nick Saban, having worked for Kirby Smart. And so from a cultural standpoint of what Mario Cristobal is already doing, fits a lot of those things. Not saying it's a mirror image and a, you know, pure carbon copy, but not someone so completely polar opposite where it didn't fit. A proven recruiter from the time that he was there, and obviously success on the field. So when you, if you're not going to get a sitting head coach with a proven track record, if you're going to go for top assistants, I say Lanning was at or near the very top of the list for not just for Oregon. He was in contention for the Oklahoma job. That's been reported, obviously. So he was going to be sought after, and he was probably going to get a head coaching job sometime this cycle. And like I say, Oregon was the right fit.
Don't think a lot of people gave Oregon much of a chance last year going to the Horseshoe and beating Ohio State, but they did that. Now they get Georgia. What is your confidence level in that opening game for Oregon?
Well, they're underdogs, and they should be underdogs, is the long and short of it. And Georgia's the reigning national champs. The game's in Atlanta, which, you know, neutral site, I mean, sure. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're playing in Sanford Stadium South. I mean, give me a break. So, okay. But they should be underdogs. I mean, you got to be realistic. You know, for as talented a team as Oregon is, they can be a fringe top 10 team in a preseason poll. They could be one of the favorites to go to a Pac-12 championship game. If this were still a division-based conference, they would be the overwhelming favorite to win the North Division. So all those things can still be true, and you can still be a multi-score underdog against the number one team in the country. At least the reigning national champions, whether you believe Georgia's won entering the season, or won two or three, one way or the other. You're going to be an underdog, and you should be. But having said that, do they still have incredible amounts of talent and lots of cause for optimism about the potential for not just that game, but for the season in general? Absolutely. But they should be a multi-score underdog in that game. I completely, and not just believe that, I completely agree with the betting lines that are out there and the idea that, again, that Oregon's a multi-score dog. They should be. You know, for as talented as they are, Georgia's on paper more talented, more proven, has less massive and major questions. And they are the reigning national champs.
James, how committed is Oregon to the Pac-10 as it develops from the Pac-12 into the Pac-10? How committed is Oregon?
It's a great question. I think it's a question that all 10 remaining institutions really have to ask on a day-to-day basis until we get to finality, until we get to actual decision-making. And with that in mind, I don't think anyone, if they're being objectively truthful, can say that they really are committed to this conference until you know a lot more by way of detail. Who among the 10 institutions who are remaining can say it just unequivocally, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, no matter what the circumstance, they're committed to the league. And I say that even for Oregon State and Washington State, quite frankly, because if the right dominoes fall, then all of a sudden everybody's, you know, even those who seemingly would be in a very precarious position, they're no longer in a very good position at all by staying put. So bottom line, I don't think anybody of the remaining 10 schools in the Pac-10 can say beyond a shadow of a doubt that they're committed to the long term of staying in the conference. And by long term right now, that's basically 2 years from now, starting 2 years from now, but most especially 4 years from now. I don't know that anyone in the league can say that absolutely at the moment. I think everybody has to look out for their best interest. Obviously, that's what the LA schools did. And in terms of what happens next, we'll see.
So Oregon caught off guard by USC, UCLA, or did were there rumblings? Did they see it coming?
To a man, there's still there's been a presentation or an conversation that, again, for, I'm not speaking for every single person in the institution and whatnot, but in some conversation I've had, there was, I want to say, complete shock or anything like that, a degree of surprise, because after all, these were obviously, you know, founding members of the league and things for over, you know, 100 years. Having said that, even in chatting with Rob Mullins back at Pac-12 Media Day a couple weeks ago, as he said, after some initial, you know, your immediate reaction, you get back to like, all right, well, if you're in that person's shoes, he even said, what else are they supposed to do? And that's the acknowledging of the financial reality of this for the LA schools in particular, but for anybody in conference realignment. And that's where I say, like, even in the if the initial reaction is to have been caught off guard or somewhat surprised or those things, ultimately, anyone in college athletics after the year before with Texas and Oklahoma leaving, anyone in the FBS level should have been thinking in the idea of, well, gosh, who is basically untouchable in that perspective? If you're not in the SEC or the Big Ten, nobody else in major college sports, especially major college football, should have been thinking that stability was an absolute outside of those two leagues. It wasn't, it isn't, and it's not going to be. You know, we're, it's been said by many more person than I that we're probably headed towards those two leagues running a whole lot of things. I very much firmly believe that. So it was Oregon caught off guard. You know, depending on who you ask at the institution, I'm sure some people were a little bit. But truly, I don't believe that everybody was completely naive to the idea that change could be coming. I mean, I don't know how, frankly, I don't forget about whether it's Oregon or anywhere else. I don't know how anybody could when you had Mike Bowen on record going back, I think even pre-COVID, to the idea saying, you know, again, by name, saying, hey, we've got to look out for what's best for us. We might have to go independent at USC. How could anybody then, you know, nearly 2 years later be completely, what, stunned that they left? I mean, the athletic director was on the job less than 6 months when he said they might have to pursue independence. How can anybody act like they were shocked when they leave?
James, are you hearing of any successes or lack thereof in the world of Pac-12's search for their next broadcasting partnership?
No, I don't want to give any fuel to the fire to that. No, not on the broadcasting side. No, I have not. But I don't think that that's something that gets sorted out in the next month, 3 months, maybe even 6 months anyway. I just don't. I think there's the potential partners who they could be ultimately discussing things with, between those with the exclusive window and stuff right now, and then where we'll probably get with a true going to open market situation. Regardless, those entities, nobody would want to engage, strategically speaking, without knowing about certain guarantees themselves either. And by that, I mean, and I've said this in plenty of spots and even, you know, addressed this with the commissioner going back a couple of weeks ago at Pac-12 Media Day, saying, if you're the SEC or the Big Ten, if you're Kevin Warren and Greg Sankey, how does it best serve you to continue to permit postseason access in the future playoff to not just the Pac-10, but any other league? If you're not one of those leagues, if you're not one of the two of them, how does it serve your interests to continue to allow expansion and access for all the other leagues. It doesn't. Well, and if they're the two most powerful leagues and two most powerful commissioners, I think a lot of the decision-making when it comes to major college, major college sports, and certainly the college football playoff and everything that, filters thereafter, is going to come from them. So how does that end up affecting the Pac-12 or Pac-10, whatever we're calling it? Well, it does, because if the expanded and new playoff starting in 2026 is still encompassing all the conferences that we know today, including the Pac-10, well, then, okay, then your television partners know that you still have a path to the playoff. But if an expanded playoff is only a two-league enterprise, well, then I don't think anybody's on very sure footing, whether we're talking about the Pac-10, the Big 12, even the ACC. If you're not invited to the table, well, then that table is going to look a whole lot different. So I think that's, to me, really the first major domino in all of this, including with Notre Dame. Yes, they're obviously a very big factor to anybody's decision-making, but I think the biggest thing for the Pac-10's future prospects, whether we're talking about media rights or anything else, is postseason access for the playoff. And I don't operate from the assumption and position that we should just take it as a granted that the Pac-10 is going to continue to have clear and obvious access to the future expanded college football playoff. They very well might. I'm not saying they're not going to. I'm just saying I don't assume that they're going to. There's a difference.
Would Oregon want, and would they be able to get an uneven revenue distribution in a new TV contract? I mean, obviously they would want it. You think they would have the power to get it if in a new TV contract they go away from an equal distribution?
Yes. That is short and brief and direct to the point. Yes. Any school would want it. When the school with the biggest brand, who's consistently brought in the best television ratings, and of the remaining 10 schools, has had the best performance, starting with football, but across the board, department-wide almost, outside of Stanford. And yes, there are 36 sports, and being able to claim, wins in water polo and things that just isn't on television. Yes, Oregon should certainly would not only want unequal distribution, should seek uneven distribution on those terms. Now you can get into what that means in terms of long-term viability and how do you structure such a deal and those sorts of things. That's so many layers deep into the process. Right now, I mean, you got to call it what it is, guys. The league is facing an existential crisis. Yes, an unequal revenue distribution from TV could certainly help remedy the situation. But again, to me, the first thing is you have to deal with the far even bigger picture and the reality of that, because let's get to the true brass tacks of this. If the Big Ten deal is going to be as lucrative as we all are being led to believe at the moment, which is extreme, if each Big Ten school is getting $100 million annual basis from their television deal, under what unequal distribution model would you suggest that Oregon stay put and float a $50 million annual deficit by comparison? How far do you want to be behind Rutgers and Purdue and Illinois? How many tens of millions? How is that palatable? And it's not just an Oregon question, by the way. Oregon, Utah, Washington, Arizona, whoever. How many tens of millions, if you're a fan of those schools, do you want your team, your school, to be behind on an annual basis where you think your donor base is going to be willing to help overcome that deficit on an annual basis, even under unequal revenue distribution? So even if Oregon was pulling in $70 million a year somehow in some just totally lopsided situation, which just means that Oregon State and Washington State are going to be making that much less. Okay, but then Oregon State and Washington State and Cal, quite frankly, and Colorado, they're going to be making so much less that after, 5 or 10 years, they're $400, $500, $700 million behind. I mean, I don't know how that becomes tenable after a while.
Well, hey, we certainly appreciate your time. Thanks. Yeah, I got you. I just, unless somebody's willing to give you $100 million, if the Big Ten doesn't come calling, then you have to find a way to make it work the best of your ability.
And unless the Big 12 is a leveraging point, or you know, if there's a leveraging point of, hey, we'll go.
Yeah, but we'll leave. They're not making
agreed.
That kind of money.
Yeah, no.
Completely agree, guys. But that's why I say, but turn it on its head for a second. What if the playoff is just a two-conference enterprise? Well, then it all becomes about further consolidation into two leagues.
Yeah.
And you change the math of what it means to be a member of those leagues, because now being a member in and of itself is a barrier to entry to the postseason.
Yeah.
It changes all the calculations. Everything right now, all the points you're hitting on, absolutely right, 100% correct, but all predicated on the assumption. The first assumption is everything's the status quo. All 10 conferences in Notre Dame, all 11 entities who sit at the table are still going to keep sitting at the table. If that changes, that's the first if that all these conversations are built upon that hasn't been thoroughly examined enough in my estimation. If that were to change, it changes everything. It changes the math of everything. It further consolidates into two leagues where maybe the Big Ten and SEC become 20 or 24 team leagues. And then it really, if they get to 24 or something crazy, well then, is it that crazy? That's basically the top 50 teams in the sport. Well, not for nothing. Are there really more than 50 teams truly, truly competing at the highest level of college football to try and win national championships every year? I mean, the Power Five is already 65, and we know that half of them aren't even truly competing at that kind of a level. So is it really that crazy a notion to suggest that if it did become the SEC and the Big Ten running the playoff, that the top 48 or 50 schools competing for a championship is that crazy? I don't think so.
No. Nope. We certainly appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, James.
Look forward to catching up again here soon.
Appreciate you.
Likewise. Thanks, guys.
You got it. James Crepia, kind enough to join us right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on kslpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.